Welcome to a Question of Ethics Conversation. The topic for this discussion is organizational fairness. The October 26, 2023 Question of Ethics Conversation, hosted by Samantha Wallace, brought up many interesting questions. One set of questions I had revolved around the concept of fairness. We're all dedicated to fairness and take it seriously. Canon 1.3 of NACOM's Model Code of Conduct for Court Professionals speaks to fairness. It reads that the court professional makes the court accessible and conducts his or her business without bias or prejudice. Fairness is actually mentioned 9 different times in the Model Code. I also realize that fairness is subjective. Everyone has their own idea of what is fair. What I consider fair may not be the same as how you see things. So my question is, what are the perceptions of fairness in an organization, and particularly a court organization? Throughout my career as a manager, I've had employees express their perceptions of fairness, with which I don't always agree. I had to concede, however, that they had a right to their perception, and that perception was valid for them. Mind you, not all employees share these perceptions. They were, however, common enough that I thought it might be instructive to ask if we as managers could come up with responses that could convince employees of a differing view of fairness. Can we come up with something more than just saying the organization has determined the following policy to be fair and the topic is not up for debate? Today, I've recounted 3 specific perceptions that employees over the years have expressed to me. I'll display each and then ask all of you if there's some kind of a response that could persuade employees of the validity of a different concept. Perception 1. A manager needs to be able to perform the desk work of every employee he or she manages. If the manager cannot, that manager has no right to conduct performance reviews of the employees. Let me add a disclaimer. During the October 26 conversation, we agreed that the best purpose of a performance review is to enhance communication between the employee and the manager. However, the reality is that many courts still require annual reviews as policy. Reviews are often still tied to compensation, and they're often necessary to establish a basis for future disciplinary action. So with that in mind, Stacey Werby?
I think it depends on the department or division. If I were looking at someone who was, say, a manager of the civil department, I would expect for that manager to know how to do all the inner workings of the civil department. But if I'm looking at someone who's a clerk of court of an entire court system and all the different pieces there, and they might not have a super granular understanding of each of the little pieces that goes into that. And I would understand that. So I think it depends on the manager and who they're managing.
Samantha Wallace?
I agree with Stacey. If you're the big shot manager of multiple departments, it's just completely unrealistic to expect them to be able to know how to do every little thing. But like she said, if you're civil, criminal, if you are in a smaller department, sure, it's more realistic to expect them to know how to do, if you only have 3 or 4 employees under you, yeah, you should know how to do their jobs, especially if they call out sick, or something like that. But I think, it just really depends on the size of your department.
So in a smaller department, you do think that the manager should be able to perform the tasks of the employees under him or her?
Yes, presumably they would all be similar enough that could be accomplished. I mean, I can't imagine you would be a manager of someone, 4 completely different job titles, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the critique that if one cannot perform the tasks of that employee's job, the manager has no right to conduct a performance evaluation of that employee?
I don't know a non-harsh way of saying that, it's my job to do that. Not too bad, so sad, but I guess I don't know a compassionate way of saying that, I'm sorry you feel that way, but this is part of my duty as a manager is to do this.
Fidel Webb?
Yes, I will agree with my colleagues that it does depend on the job and the type of work, but I'll also add an additional perspective is that some managers may not need to know exactly how to do it, but they may have an idea on how long it should take. what competent work in that area looks like and what to look for in terms of mistakes. So I think that you can have managers that don't know every single in and out, but if they know how to manage, they know what to look for, they know how long it should take you, then they will be able to effectively provide a adequate evaluation for you. So I think we should have competent managers. I think that's what the heart of this question goes to. If you have a manager that doesn't understand the amount of time that something should take, and then they're just evaluating someone unfairly, I think I would want to get down to the bottom of it, right? So this perception to me is, it's very much like a blanket perception. But if I had someone say to me, my manager evaluated me unfairly because this type of task would take anyone 2 hours, and my manager is expecting this to be done in 30 minutes, well, then I would say, well, yeah, you probably shouldn't be evaluating them if you don't know that aspect of it. So I think you don't have to know everything, but you should know enough about the process, how long it takes, and what makes a good outcome versus a bad outcome to be able to evaluate that person.
Well, and piggybacking off of Creedell, I mean, if someone came to me with a specific instance, like, no, you don't know how long it takes to process this paperwork, I would say, okay, show me then. That way I know how long it would take. So, I mean, I think you can learn little things, but yes, it's just an impossible standard to expect a manager to learn everything.
Is there a way to effectively convince an employee that it is unreasonable for a manager to be expected to know how to perform every assigned task?
I think it's more of how you say it. I wouldn't say it like that to somebody, because again, I would want them to expand more about what the complaint is, not just generally speaking. I mean, I would need that employee to walk me through what problem that they're having. And I would say, you know, although we may not be able to get our managers to know every single thing, we do want this to be a fair process experience for you. You know, we want to increase our employee engagement and retention. So I wouldn't want to make an employee feel that way. I want them to feel heard. And I would try my best to show them that they do have managers that are going to be fair. But to the same token, the employee can't get everything that they want. You can't get the manager to understand every piece of every moving part, especially as Stacy and Samantha have said, if they are managing so many different types of job titles, there's no way, but they should be competent enough to evaluate those employees.
I would
Rick
just
Pierce,
add that I think
Judicial Programs Administrator, Administrative Office of the Courts, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
People have to understand, the employee has to understand that the evaluation and the review is a direct reflection on the manager too. So the manager, if the manager is he or she is does not know what the individual is supposed to be doing, and maybe the person is not performing up to standard, that's a reflection on the manager as well. So I think the employee has to know that when the performance evaluation, yes, it's a direct assessment of the individual's performance, but it's also a reflection on what the manager has provided over the course of the evaluation period. Regarding resources, maybe it's education, professional growth, maybe it's the literal resources that need to be, whether it's manpower or something else that needs to be resolved and addressed. I think those things really are a reflection on the manager too. And it does bode well for the manager to make sure that they communicate that to that person as they do the evaluation. I agree with my colleagues here, but I would also say that the manager's job is to have a very good, well-rounded knowledge of what takes place, but not necessarily specifically details on how to go about accomplishing the particular task. But their job is to inspire them and to encourage them and to provide them with the resources that they need to accomplish the goals that are stated. And that's what I think. But the problem we find, and I find this in my shop too, we don't do a good enough job communicating that from both levels, whether it's the employee communicating that to the manager or the manager communicating that to the employee.
Let me ask you to respond to a specific example of a difficult management challenge. How do you manage interpreters, court reporters, probate accountants, or IT staff? Is it a valid criticism to say that one has to come from the ranks of those professions in order to manage them?
No, it's not a valid criticism if the manager does something to find out what it is, what are those challenges, and what are those needs for that core reporter? And it could be just communicating with the individuals who work closely with that core reporter or other court reporters about the position itself. They don't have to have that specialized skill, but they have to know something about what they do.
Crudell Webb, Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer, First Judicial District, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
They have a certain amount of expertise, and based on the job description and everything like that. So if the person is not producing, you don't necessarily have to have the skill set to know that a person is not producing. So I'll give you an example. I'm very good at creating PowerPoint presentations. But let's say I wasn't, and I decided I need to hire someone that can create PowerPoint presentations. If I hire them and they're not creating PowerPoint presentations, and they said during the interview that they could create these presentations, then I could adequately say this person is not fit to do this particular job because they actually can't do what they said they could produce in the interview.
Perception 2. Managing employees is just using common sense. There is no great skill involved in management. It is ridiculous that courts pay exorbitant salaries to managers just for applying their common sense. Crudell Webb?
Managing is not just using common sense. I think when we think about management, we first have to think about there's a lot of rules that we have. So if you're at a court, it could be those rules of conduct, you know, conduct for employees. There could be things that you have to think about in terms of accommodations, you know, HR considerations. So managers have to be very aware of those. They have to be aware how they talk to people, the things that they say, responses that they give to their staff. They have to be knowledgeable, and they also have to know who and when to ask for help. Furthermore, you're not just dealing with work, you're also dealing with things like employees when they can't come in, you're dealing with scheduling, you may be dealing with personality issues, and there are a lot of best practices and classes you can take to better your management skills. I mean, people have degrees in management. This is not something that just is common sense or comes easy. And even if you have the skill set, you have to have the emotional intelligence for management. So I would definitely disagree with this perception. Now, I don't want to discount a person if they're saying this. You know, there are some people that do have bad managers, and maybe they feel like the manager is just, you know, managing from the hip, and they have not learned any best practices. And so maybe they've developed this perception as a bad habit. But this perception from their perspective should not be a reflection upon management in general. I think management can be very difficult, and people have to make sure that they have the skill sets and emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm.
Well, I also disagree Samantha with Wallace, this perception.
Deputy there Trial Court Administrator, Supreme Court, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
That you assume when you take on a managerial or leadership role, that it seems like a very, very much an outsider's perspective. Someone who, I could only assume someone would say this if they've never had one of those roles before. If someone, you know, if something happens to one of your employees, it's you that's basically on the firing line. You have to take responsibility for your employees. It's definitely not just common sense. As Crudell said, there's so much training involved, ongoing training. You don't get trained once and then you use that. It's ongoing. You have to keep going to these classes, and things are often changing, just as we're having these discussions right now.
I think my greatest,
Stacey Werby. State Jury Coordinator, Alaska Court System, Anchorage.
Isn't probably there or what the perception is. But yeah, I agree with everyone else. It's not just about having common sense. It's about how you apply it. And as you said, Crudell, the emotional intelligence to interact with people, and especially a big group of people, and manage them appropriately. So I think sounds like we're pretty united here in disagreeing with this perception.
Yes, I would also add you need critical thinking skills, problem-solving skills.
Perception 3. The employee's manager is not the employee's friend. If the employee gets into trouble at work, they need an advocate. The manager will not save them. Rick Pierce?
On its face, I agree with the statement. But when you put in a reality, particularly those individuals who value relational authority or relational power more than transactional power, I think that there is definitely some benefits. I think what you need to, the employee needs to have in the back of their mind is this perception, but that shouldn't preclude them from trying to establish a strong professional relationship with their manager. And I don't think it should preclude the manager as well. It is, I understand it, it's a tightrope and it's a fine line to walk, but at the same point in time, it gives this perception, gives this view that there's two sides to this and that you're actually not necessarily working in lock and step. And we're not robots here. We are human beings and we do seek the comfort of the people that, and the approval of the people that we work with and work for. So that it seems natural, especially the amount of time that you spend with an individual or individuals, if it's multiple managers and multiple supervisors, that you would want to develop some type of bond with those people. And conversely, I think the same can be said for some managers. You have to be careful, of course, yes. But like I said, I think it's something that you have to take into account that we are human beings here and that this is not going to be something that you can do is cut and dry.
Crudell Webb?
I agree with Rick. I think it's very important, the relationship component. I'll add to that, I think it depends on what you're getting in trouble for. So if you did something that's extremely egregious, sometimes it's just rule-based. You know, you're going to get in trouble based on whatever it is that you did. You may not have an explanation, and now, you know, here's going to be the consequence for that. However, there are other times when managers can definitely advocate for their employee. Let's say a customer comes in and complains, but the manager's standing right there and that complaint was untrue. So at that point, the manager would be an advocate and would make sure that they, you know, tell whoever the supervisor is or the person making the decision, hey, I was standing right there. They didn't say that to this particular person who came into the courthouse. So I think this all depends. You do talk about the power imbalance. I think if there's mutual respect, then the power imbalance is not such a heavy component. However, if there's a lack of trust, you know, if there's a negative history with management, a negative history with HR, then that power imbalance, yeah, then maybe that comes into play. Maybe the manager was trying to get rid of this employee already, and now here's the one last straw. At that point, you know, maybe this manager is not your advocate. But I think this is a case-by-case basis. I don't think everyone should go into a situation assuming that the manager is not going to look out for them. I know when I managed a staff of 10 employees, I relied on my employees and anything that I could do to advocate for them to make sure that they would stay with me and continue to work and have a good working relationship among each other. I thought that was something that benefited not just the office, but me personally. So it was in my best interest to make sure that I had the backs of my employees and my staff. But to the same token, we have to follow the rules, right? If they're breaking the rules or if there's some ethical considerations or something that HR needs to handle or a policy that they broke, I mean, we have rules in there. So there's only so far that we can go in terms of our advocacy. At some point, certain things are out of your manager's hands.
Samantha Wallace?
I think it also harkens back to the perception of fairness. If, once again, it depends on how many employees you have under you. But if you have a lot and you are spending a lot of time with maybe only a few people, of course, that can be perceived as, oh, these are your friends. They might get preferential or special treatment. And I know we discussed this back in the October one. It's really hard if you start out on the same level and become people's friends and then get promoted above them. It gets really, really complicated. And especially spending time with them outside of work. You know, if you grow close with these people and that you do consider them your friends, what's appropriate and what's not, the lines get very blurred. And it really just, I think, depends on your specific work environment, perhaps your HR department, how things are handled. But yeah, this is definitely not a simple issue by any means.
Stacey Werby?
Well, this perception's worded a little harshly, but I do agree that an employee should have access to an advocate if they feel there is an imbalance so that they have some kind of comfort going into these conversations and not feel, and this is also harshly worded, but not feel attacked in the conversation and feel like they have an ally there with them. So, well, I don't think, especially in our experiences, that we wouldn't want to be that type of manager where someone feels like that. I think it should be available for people who might not be in such a good managerial relationship.
I want to thank Stacey Werby, Samantha Wallace, Gridell Webb, and Rick Pierce for their experiences and ideas concerning organizational fairness. I invite you folks tuning in today to become part of the discussion by attending the Ethics Subcommittee meetings where we record the Question of Ethics conversation. The Ethics Subcommittee meets every fourth Thursday of the month at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. So until next time, have a great day. Thanks for joining us today. The Question of Ethics conversation is a regular segment on ethics, courts, and court administration. Today's episode will be available on our website, in the Court Manager Journal, on the Court Leader website, on YouTube, Facebook, iTunes, LinkedIn, and on X, formerly known as Twitter. Become part of the conversation. Join us live when we hold the Question of Ethics conversation. Episodes are held immediately following the monthly NACM Ethics Subcommittee meeting on the fourth Thursday of the month. Check the NACM Committee webpage for the schedule and Zoom link. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for future conversations, email us. Our address is ethics@nacmnet.org. Did you hear an interesting comment by one of the panelists that you would like to listen to again, but you don't want to search the entire episode to find it? The additional resources section on the webpage has a question time marker sheet. Find the discussion question on the sheet, and next to it is the time that question was asked. You can quickly fast forward to that time and listen to the panelists' comments. Remember, if you don't have time to watch an episode, you can always listen to the audio version. Listen in your car or on the bus on your way to or from work. You never have to miss an episode. I'm Pete Kiefer, and on behalf of our guests, the Court Leader website, and the National Association for Court Management, thank you, and have a great day. The views, information, and opinions expressed during this episode are solely those of the hosts and the individual presenters. They do not necessarily represent the position of the National Association for Court Management.